Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I made a statement I should not have, and I am here to apologize to all of the voters and the residents of Maricopa County. I'm sorry that this statement has caused the discomfort that it has. I got this one wrong. I'm sorry that I let you down.
Dr. Ward represents the conservative insurgency. I think you will see that the establishment will try to come to Arizona and see what they can do. But I think really that the conservative movement is frustrated with many of its Washington leaders, and I think they're ready to rebel.
I believe that that Mr. Mueller's conflict of interest is absolute and incontrovertible, and I think that this is just further indication that he's headed in this direction no matter what. It's ironic because ostensibly his investigation was supposed to be into Donald Trump's potential involvement with Russia, and yet this doesn't have anything to do with Donald Trump.
And joining us to talk about the first indictments of Robert Mueller's investigation and the first polling numbers since Jeff Flake announced he wasn't running for re-election and more, our attorney and former Tempe Mayor Hugh Holman, and Matthew Benson, partner at Veritas and former gubernatorial communications director. Matt, let me start with you on the Robert Mueller investigation. To some people, it's special prosecutor, here we go again, Kenneth Starr sort of going into other things that were not directly related to Bill Clinton. How do you assess the first indictments and where we're at right now with Paul Manafort, et cetera?
Well, I think it's the first indication that this investigation is moving. It's moving swiftly, and it's starting to generate results. Obviously, you've got a guilty plea already from this George Papadopoulos, if I'm pronouncing that correct, a former campaign aide with the Trump campaign. And then also a dozen indictments against Paul Manafort, former campaign manager, and another business colleague of his for activities that, granted, occurred long before the campaign. But again, this is just the first foray, and I think it shows that these are the first of what I would expect to be multiple indictments related to this.
Hugh, how important is Papadopoulos going to end up being here as far as what he has giving to the feds? It seems like he's been targeted in that sense.
Well, let's start with the big picture, which is if this is an investigation about Russia, somebody's missed the mark. My fear is that bringing the first round of indictments on subjects that had nothing to do with the initial investigation's purpose is going to undermine the value and point of the investigation. Our society is not going to be healed and brought together when these kinds of things continue to go in that direction. So in terms of George Papadopoulos, the reality is here's a guy who wanted to be somebody really, really important and big. And what's he do? He wants to demonstrate he's got connections to Russia and can help undermine Hillary Clinton. And the answer that Jeff Sessions finally gives when he tells them this in March of 2016 is, no, that's a bad idea. Then where's the story? How does this connect to the Trump campaign? If we put that the kind of weight we're putting on these little tiny jittles, it's going to undermine our society's ability to take seriously the things that should be taken seriously.
Well, I'm less concerned about our society and its ability to survive this. I think we absolutely will survive it, and I think that it's critical that we get some answers in terms of what happened or didn't happen during the campaign. And look, the most meaningful part of what occurred this week was the news that Mr. Papadopoulos has been a willing participant in this investigation and has been cooperating and, by some accounts, may even been have been wearing a wire or of some sort for a long period of time as part of this investigation. So if that is the case, we don't yet know what information has been gathered as part of that, but I would suspect quite a bit.
So let's sit around and speculate about what we don't know and pretend that that is factual information that is news. It's not. It's opinion. And I don't think our society is going to blow apart over this, but the direction we keep heading is that we are now confounding fact and information with opinion and bias. A professor who was on in the last hour just talked about the fact that we have inherent biases. She said, you know, we all have them. We have these. We don't have the same biases, however. And that's what we're now seeing played out in 140 characters across our society, is that folks are pulling farther and farther away from the middle in some connection. And this kind of activity doesn't help us. Robert Mueller's bringing forward Paul Manafort and Robert Gates as the leading indicators.
Robert Gates.
Yeah. Could mix him up with Bill. The point is that if you bring those forward as the first indication of the Trump collusion with Russia, then we've completely missed the mark. Now it's undermined entirely one narrative, and we're going to have a new narrative, and that is, look at Mueller being completely conflicted out and abuse of power and all these kinds of things. We don't need that.
Matt, as far as what we heard from Congressman Franks in the intro there, do you think this notion that Robert Mueller is compromised in some way, he has a conflict of interest, he should recuse himself or resign from this post, is that a narrative you think that is gaining traction or will be gaining traction as this investigation goes forward and there might be more indictments handed out?
I would expect among Trump loyalists in Congress and elsewhere, that is going to be the lead attack line that they're going to use to suggest this should all be either shut down entirely or discounted and dismissed. So, yeah, I think that's going to be we're going to continue to see that line of attack. Look, ultimately, facts are what matter. The truth is what matters. And so without making any having any preconceived ideas about where this is going to head, I think when the facts do come forward, we can all make a judgment about what those facts say. And if Bob Mueller, who, you know, previously has been very well respected prosecutor, if he does his homework here and his team does, I think it's going to be pretty tough to just say this is all fake news.
And you're not hearing me say it's fake news. Let's be painfully clear about that. I'm looking for information and news that helps me make that assessment. And the confounding opinion and speculation with what's really going on is what's causing his problems. So we now have the counter narrative, which is Robert Mueller is conflicted out. We've got the facts that we now are starting to see come forward with Fusion GPS, with Chris Steele's dossier, with Perkins Coie, a firm I, in an earlier iteration, worked for. Those facts are going to have to be investigated as well. My hope is that Mueller will take all of these kinds of things and push them forward together so it'll blunt the arguments from either side about that this is only about somebody undermining society for their own political purposes.
Now, one would not think a special prosecutor is under pressure. He should be off doing his own work. But when you mention the fact that Manafort and Gates, maybe this is not meaningful necessarily because we don't know what sort of connection it is. We know that the media will report on things like this regardless. This is an indictment related to a major situation. Should there have been some sort of gag? Should Robert Mueller or his team should have? Because they're not the ones emphasizing it as a major key. The media is at this point.
Correct. And so they had a choice of when they're going to drop those indictments. There's many, many instances in which investigators withhold those kinds of moves precisely because then they use those individuals to further find out information. We've got Carter Page now having reported that he was in a meeting with Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump and said, I'm taking a trip to Russia. And now we've got Jeff Sessions under pressure that, why didn't he remember that? Well, I'm sorry, it was probably vitally important to Carter Page that he was going to Russia. But him reporting on his grandkids and other things he was doing was not particularly important to others. When facts come out that suggest there's real information there, I think we ought to spend time on it. But the speculation process that we've been going through, and it's getting worse and worse because that's what people want to do. It's my opinion matters now. And every person with a Twitter account now has an opinion that apparently matters.
Matt, from a governing perspective, what does all this do to the Trump administration, both in terms of their ability to work with Congress, their ability to stay focused on the job at hand when they might not know what's next?
I think it's fairly paralyzing, might be overstating it. But look, this is an enormous distraction, obviously. The word that this Papadopoulos has been cooperating with the feds for a lengthy period of time has got to send shivers down the spines of a lot of folks who've been involved in a lot of conversations with him and with the administration over a long period of time and wondering whether they're going to be implicated in the future. The feds have already been interviewing other members, current and former, with the administration, folks getting their own private attorneys. So it's an enormous distraction at a time when they're trying to get big things done, namely on tax reform, health care is still out there, North Korea, and the rest. So, yeah, it's a bad circumstance for any new administration.
Self-inflicted wounds all around. And to be clear, if it's not been clear to others in the past, I actually loathe, in the same way that Jeff Flake has indicated, the talents of this administration and how they display them. The massive opportunity to improve our society has been squandered on silliness. It is a huge distraction for important issues. One example is Governor Ducey's talking about needing to bring, not to jump your issues, but children's health care is now not been funded by Congress.
Well, a vote was taken today which may move in that direction. We don't know yet, right?
Yeah, a vote was taken today that may move in that direction because it's 76 other steps that have to be taken. Government now, through the congressional process, is not working and hasn't been working for a decade. This is not the first time. Let's go back to how it impacted lots of regular human beings. In 2012, we had an estate tax issue which said that we have no estate tax up through December 31st of 2012. On January 1st of 2013, it was going to revert back 10 years and make anybody who had estates larger than $600,000 subject to estate tax. Congress did not act until January 4th of 2013. Massive numbers of lawyers and accountants and insurance companies made big piles of money because of the uncertainty. That's what Congress is doing to us on this kind of an issue involving kids' health insurance across the country. 9 million kids. That's absurd.
That's Hugh Holman. Also here is Matt Benson. We're in the midst of our Friday newscap on the show on KJZZ. More of the conversation right after this. It's Friday morning. You're listening to the show on 91.5 in the midst of our Friday newscap segment. I'm Steve Goldstein with Mark Brody. Also here, attorney and former Tempe Mayor Hugh Holman and Matthew Benson, partner at Veritas and former gubernatorial communications director. Matt, let's look at the first post-Jeff Flake announcement poll, if I could say that more awkwardly, as far as who could succeed him and whatnot. Kelly Ward, based on the poll that we saw, is leading with in the low 20s. We're seeing other names like Martha McSally, Matt Salmon. What do you make of this first poll?
Well, first, let's take that poll with a mountain of salt, okay? this was a poll commissioned by the Ward campaign by a pollster nobody has ever heard of, and I believe it was partial auto dial, push poll, and partial online, okay? So you put all these factors together and a lot of reason for skepticism. But that aside, it did show that Kelly Ward was leading each of the Republican candidates and that she would beat in the fall, that she would beat Kyrsten Sinema, the Democrat, by a couple points. Look, here's what's really going on behind the scenes. There is a ton of money being spent on actual legitimate polling, internal polling, and those polls show that there are two Republicans that run away from the field and can beat Kyrsten Sinema in the general election. One's the governor, Doug Ducey. The other is the treasurer, Jeff DeWitt. Mm-hmm. Neither of these individuals have shown an inclination to get into this race. And the other fact is that these are also the two candidates that could be backed by Donald Trump, that he would get behind. Okay? So that is the box. That is the conundrum the Republican Party finds itself in.
What significance do you ascribe to the fact that, for example, Kelly Ward has brought on someone like Ed Rollins on her campaign? I mean, does that— We tend to talk now a lot about staffers on campaigns. Is that significant? Does that matter to voters? Does that help her in any way, do you think?
Well, I don't know that voters don't know who Ed Rollins is. Where it matters is it shows there is some professionalism coming into her operation, which was lacking in the past. Certainly in her last, in her campaign, the last cycle against John McCain, she didn't have this level of professionalism. The fact that folks like Steve Bannon and Senator Rand Paul came out behind her this week. So there are some mainstream figures getting behind her, but she is still Kelly Ward. She still has the baggage of chemtrails and the rest of it. And you can't just wash that away with, here's Ed Rollins.
Ed Rollins is a terrific guy. I actually worked for him in 1984 for the Reagan-Bush campaign. He was my second direct report. But even Ed has challenges. He once assisted a former Texan in trying to run for president that fell apart twice. He then passed around or talked to it was a joke about walking around money in another election. And so Ed is not quite at the top of his game these days. But the poll. So this far out in the 2014 election, I would have been the state treasurer. Mm-hmm. I'm clearly not the state treasurer. Instead, Jeff DeWitt is, and he's now being mentioned to be becoming the next senator for the state of Arizona who could beat Kyrsten Sinema. All of that's making all kinds of assumptions that most voters have paid no attention to this race, won't be paying attention to this race, even though all of us in this room know everything about it. And it will matter sometime around June of next year during the long, hot, nasty summer when people are trying to figure out what to do. So if Jeff DeWitt jumps in, I suspect he'd give it a good shot. He ran a very effective treasurer's race. The governor no doubt would run a great treasurer's race. I don't see why he would decide to run for Jeff Flake's seat when instead he might look at other options for a Senate seat.
Hugh, though, and Matt brings up the idea of so much money being involved, and whether it's money that is construed as dark money or something else, what's important right now to a lot of people is the fact that you're right, June is when voters will start paying attention, but now is the time when money needs to be raised. So who do you think is legitimate in that field who can raise some money other than Doug Ducey and Jeff DeWitt?
Martha McSally, probably. I don't think Matt Salmon would be interested in this. The other names that are mentioned, most people come from the Jeff Flake category of folks who've been in the business a long time, and Republican primary voters point out and say, Rhino! The challenge is the word establishment now is used anytime anyone wants to say that person should be completely disregarded by anybody who thinks differently and believes that Donald Trump might be the right direction to go. So the word establishment is all that has to get uttered. In a Republican primary room, say establishment and Rhino, and that person's done.
In a situation like this, where it is essentially an open seat and you have a potentially large group of candidates who are at least considering getting into the race, what is the threshold at which they determine, yes, I can raise enough money to be competitive, or no, I cannot?
Well, I think for a race like this, you've got to be able to raise at least $5 million, at least $5 million. That's low end. That's the threshold. And those conversations are going on right now among folks like Martha McSally, who I would consider an ideal general election candidate for the Republicans. She would be tremendously difficult to beat, great voting record for a statewide race, fantastic bio. Problem is, I don't know that she can get out of a Republican primary. And you have already seen sniping from the Steve Bannon wing of the party against her, saying they absolutely will not accept her. So again, this is the conundrum for the Republican Party in 2017.
And that's how Kyrsten Sinema wins the election. So she's got to hope that it's a traditional Republican primary. She did exactly the same thing in CD9. She was able to beat her Republican opponents in both cycles precisely because they ran to the right to get to the very small number of Republican primary voters, and they couldn't get back to the middle. And she painted them right in that corner.
And Kyrsten Sinema is a uniquely talented political figure, probably the most talented political figure for the Democratic Party in this state. In fact, I would suggest you have to go all the way back to Janet Napolitano to find somebody who approaches her. It has carved out a strong centrist voting record for herself, raises money like a madwoman. She will be tremendously difficult to beat, regardless of what Republican gets into this race.
That's exactly right.
And Hugh, finally on this topic, how do you construe Kelly Ward right now? Because when she ran against John McCain, she was criticized for certain things like chemtrails. She was criticized since then for commenting on John McCain's health in a not positive way. Is she a legitimate candidate now, whether or not she actually wins a primary, whether or not she beats Kyrsten Sinema?
I think she's a legitimate candidate by virtue of the fact that she has been in the same position and Donald Trump now made her relevant. And as a result of the Trump victory, there's some power behind that that can push money. You don't get Steve Bannon coming out for very many Senate candidates this early. And so, yes, she's legitimate. Will that sustain her through a general election? I don't actually think it does in this state. This is a Barry Goldwater libertarian-leaning state, and that is not her credential. And although it's not Kyrsten Sinema's either, Kyrsten had the smarts in CD9 to start saying, you know, I've grown, I'm older now, and I now understand why the political philosophy I was espousing when I was a young kid at the legislature doesn't make sense. Doing that early on is a smart move. I don't see Kelly Ward ever getting there.
Let's talk now about county official dropping F-bombs on constituents. And Matt, you worked in a communications role in an administration in the state. I'm curious what went through your mind when you first read about what County Recorder Adrian Fontes had posted on Facebook.
Oh, geez.
that was it, huh?
About the same thing, I think, you know, six times a day when I see President Trump tweeting and whatnot. So, look, this is the new age of politics. These guys and gals are on social media and unfiltered. And clearly this was Fontes unfiltered, right? So extremely salty language, inappropriate for the show, to a constituent who was concerned about information and whether information coming out of the county was telling him when and where the election was. And so legitimate concerns, and Fontes reacted in the way that he did. So I think, look, Adrian Fontes, as the first Democrat in memory to be elected to that office in Maricopa County, had a tremendously uphill battle to get reelected no matter what. This certainly doesn't do anything to help him.
The F-bombs sort of reminded me of Vicente Fox from Mexico. So if you haven't watched his videos, you'll at least see some more of them. But Adrian Fontes is a smart guy, hardworking, that's clear. But Helen Purcell was smart, effective, thoughtful as well. This is not an office that is all that political. And unfortunately, Adrian is now in a life that requires that it be political. He behaved badly and then didn't apologize, instead defended himself in effort after effort, and all of that is going to come back to haunt him terribly. I don't know that he had such an uphill battle, but he's now finding out these jobs, as many people are, these jobs are not as easy as they look, and that Helen did not get herself into trouble except when the elections went sideways. She was left holding the bag for a lot of other people, and tried to do similar sort of explanations. Gee, it's not my fault, but here's what we'll do to fix it. That first statement is what kills you.
Last minute or so to go here, guys. So Hugh, dropping an F-bomb, obviously not really a good idea in that sort of mixed company, but ultimately,
In this age, I think that's a wrong premise. The President of the United States has done it.
That's where I may be coming from with this, because Fontes has shown he has a very outgoing personality. And even when he first announced that, when he was testifying before the legislature, he was made this big announcement, and people seem to be drawn to that. So help or hurt, it seems to be uphill battle is agreed upon, but help or hurt him, really?
I don't think the F-bomb specifically does. I think it is the failure to recognize that he defended some people and being unwilling to apologize first, and then it's still riding him. He hasn't apologized to the specific voter.
Well,
that's the person who deserved it, not the rest of us, not his constituents, not his parents, and that didn't happen.
Matt, final word on this?
I think what matters the most for him is how he performs in carrying out the elections that are going on right now, the local bond and
we lost sight of that. Sorry, Matt. That was, yeah.
And beyond that, obviously, the major elections coming up in 2018, if he is able to avoid the foul-ups that took down Helen Purcell and her team, then he may be okay. If not, then this is the kind of thing voters will come back on.
The easiest way to avoid those problems, of course, long lines at the polls, is just to eliminate the polls and do an all-male ballot, right? Isn't that what he's done?
That'll come on our next newscap. That's attorney and former Tempe Mayor Hugh Holman. Also here was Matthew Benson, partner at Veritas and former gubernatorial communications director. Guys, thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.